secret side in plain sight. Where the streets are empty, that's where we run. Everyday people do everyday things, but I can't be one of them. I know you hear me now, we are a different kind. We can do anything. We could be heroes. We could be
gentlemen. You're actually listening to episode number 280, we think, of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast, where we discuss all things Marvel-related, comics, movies, TV, action figures, pornography, all Woo-hoo! Kinds of crazy shit. You yeah. name it, we've probably covered it at some point or another. Leading the show today is not the marvelous one. He is lost somewhere out there in the cosmos, probably trying to sing, but unfortunately his singing voice just is not to snuff, so hopefully he'll find his way back to us at some point. In the meantime, I am your auxiliary guy who's just kind of there, the Wyatt Wingfoot of the crew. I am Bri, wow. also known as News Bitch or News Boy, whatever you want to call it. Joining me is our resident hothead from New York, Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
Fuck you.
Gee, thanks for that. And our stone-faced cynic, Mr. Jonathan Courtwright, all the way from Oki. Jonathan, how you doing?
Pinocchio.
I'm doing pretty good, and I just wanted to let everybody know we have a new sponsor tonight, Body by Biscuits, for when you want to get into shape, but you don't care what.
Oh, good Lord. Benny Boy is MIA tonight, so we're going to be taking the reins of things. Yeah, I know. We're throwing caution to the wind. It's chaotic. Who knows what the hell's going to happen here tonight? But that's kind of the fun of it, isn't it? It's like there's no rules. You know, everybody take your shirts off. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Don't take your shirts off. So let's just dive right into it then, because in case you missed it from last week, a trailer dropped, a new one. You know, it's not very uncommon nowadays, but it is the trailer for the Venom movie. Oh boy, yeah. You know, we. Venom is always one of those movies where I always said, I'll wait to see a trailer before I actually believe anything's going to happen. And good Lord, the trailer happened. And now I'm scared about what is actually happening. I guess I'll take the lead, mostly because I don't really care. Taser, do you have something you'd like to say? I'm impressed by your indoor voice, but go ahead and speak up. Well, you know, if you want to.
What about Venom?
No, about what you're typing in the chat windows there.
So, we
kind of glanced over it last week.
And we were about to do it this time, too. We lost somebody recently. An old guy who worked with another old guy that was responsible for a good number of the characters that we, you know, both know and love, and in one case hold near and dear to our hearts, Steve Ditko. Steve Ditko passed away, what, yesterday?
It was a couple weeks ago now. We weren't fresh on it when we did our last show. So
I wasn't fresh yesterday. I hadn't washed up. But anyway.
I'll get the actual date. But he was paid remembrance actually in the comics from this last week. So
We messed up. We dropped the ball on that. I forgot. I guess everybody else forgot.
Yeah, I wasn't here, and I probably would have been the one who would have been like, I would have bore the brunt of that, been like, Brian, why didn't you remind us you're fired again? I can hear Benny's voice in my head. No, I was here for the last show, but not the show before that.
Oh, right.
Which is when it would have been.
Right, because that was when you was captured by IKEA. I forgot.
Yes, indeed. I was fighting off the dangerous sentient furniture over in IKEA.
Exactly.
It attacked me with its horrible Swedish accents. But yeah, I mean, Steve Ditko, I mean, legend just based on the fact that he co-created both Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, is probably his most memorable Marvel characters.
And also known for, well, because of the time that he came out, man of the psychedelic art scene, you know? I mean, we're talking about some trippy visuals he was responsible for, the most notably for the Doctor Strange. Also, I did not realize that I think Ditko might have done maybe the inks. I heard that he was responsible for that famous scene with I think that was when Spider-Man was going up against the doctor that was cloning him and that dropped all that crap on top of him, and he did that Superman shove where he lifted up all of that machinery and debris on top of him.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I heard that, you know, that was Ditko.
But I mean,
and I'm trying to
kind of split. I mean, the fact is, the guy co-created two of the biggest characters.
Oh, without a doubt, not taking it from him. But I mean, I'm just saying, in regards to Spider-Man, that is a signature moment. You know, I mean, you're looking at a guy who literally is you know at like one of the lowest points in his life. And we're talking Spider-Man here, you know, Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And
he's already pretty low to begin with.
And he decides to go, fuck it. I'm not giving up. This is not it for me. You know, I need to take command of this. I need to take control. I need to get up out of here. And he does what I think was probably one of his biggest physical feats at that point ever. You know, usually, most of the time we see Spidey punching and grabbing and kicking and whatever. This was just a straight up lift feat. And it's done in such a way that, you know, the panels, the way they present it to you is like, holy crap. How the hell is he gonna, oh shit, look what he just did. You know, that's something that calls to you. I really can't say a whole lot else other than that because, like I said, he did a lot of Doctor Strange, and I'm not the biggest Doctor Strange fan. And, you know, he did a few other things, a few other books, and unfortunately his run on Spider-Man is not one of my favorite runs either because, you know, it was old and it was like, eh. But you can't ignore what the man gave to us, and you can't ignore his efforts and what it meant to the comic community. So, I feel a bit of regret in us having missed out on, you know, giving him any type of respect timely, you know, in a timely manner. But, you know, I think I speak for all of us when we say to, you know, any family that Mr. Ditko has left, you know.
Actually, on that note, if I may, one thing that's been a kind of a recurring thing is that Ditko, I don't think, ever really had a wife or kids. He didn't really have much of a family.
Really?
He was just a dude. Yeah, I mean, when they found him, he was dead in his apartment for a few days before anybody even found him, just because he was a dude who didn't really have a family or wanted anything. He was just a dude who wanted to keep his head down and sort of make comics, you know? He was never married, anybody knew about, no children. He had a nephew who was also named Steve Ditko. But there's no other confirmed family out there for Mr. Ditko.
He was the consummate creator. You know, that was what meant everything to him. God bless.
Yeah, and
you know, and Godspeed.
He was a devout supporter of Ayn Rand's objectivism principles. So that was kind of, you know, you saw that in Morbius' work with the Distinguished Competition. But, I mean, he was just a dude who just kept his head down and wanted to make comics. You know, that was really all he did with his life. You know, Doctor Strange and Spider-Man are really more than anybody needs in one lifetime to be remembered. I mean, but the fact that he is, John, do you have anything you want to add before we move on to the next
one? Not much, but other than I got really into being a big fan of Ditko back in the early 80s when the there was that Marvel title back in the early to mid 80s that reprinted Spider-Man comics, and they were doing the reprinting of all the, you know, the early run with the, you know, Ditko and Lee, and I became a big fan of Ditko at that time from that. And I also found at a book, you know, used bookstore of all places, a paperback that showed every, you know, all of the adventures of Doctor Strange, you know, from his origin to like when he first encounters Dormammu. And oh my God, the art was just trippy, and I loved it, and I loved the writing, and that helped really get me to where I could appreciate more of the, you know, older artwork, like, say, Kirby And it's what also really made me get really into John Byrne's run on Fantastic Four, because the art was just so retro but yet modern. But, you know, but it had that Ditko Kirby feel to it. And you can't mention Marvel without mentioning Ditko outside of Stan Lee. And, you know, Ditko, you know, is very underrated. And Kirby is always going to get the lion's share of the attention, but without Ditko, there wouldn't have been some things that have been shown in Marvel even to this day.
Yeah,
that's how much influence he had.
Yeah,
and, you know, he'll be missed, and then his family, whatever remaining family that he does have, that, you know, brothers, whatever.
That's really it. He doesn't really have anybody. So
his last time I saw him do anything relatively new was back in the mid-80s when he did a run on ROM. When Marvel actually had the license at the time. And he did, you know, and again, I loved it just because I was like, wow, I'm looking at the guy who co-created Spider-Man. And he actually did Spider-Man in there.
I think he closed out ROM.
I think so.
Yeah, I think he was the artist that closed it out when they. I think it was 75, either 75, because I think Transformers finished at 85, or maybe I got.
Oh my god! You guys are talking like anybody still cares about ROM Space Night.
At IDW, it's been a damn good title.
And I'm still picking that up because it was ROM to Space Night. Just saying.
Well, anyway. That having been said, as Taser would often say to Mr. Ditko, we say adios and vaya con Dios.
And we offer a moment of silence.
Indeed. Okay, into the garbage fire. That is the Venom trailer. Let's talk about it. There's not really much. I mean, Jesus, I feel like I watched it and there's a plot, but at the same time, there isn't a plot. It's like, it seems so abstract to me. So what we have is Tom Hardy, obviously, as Eddie Brock. And, you know, he's investigating this company's pharmaceutical company or something that affects some sort of bio research. And the symbiote, I think he's like a test subject or something at one point, and then he gets infected with the symbiote. And then kind of all shit breaks loose. I don't know. See, that's the thing. I'll kind of keep it brief because I was never the hugest fan of Venom. I kind of missed the boat on him. I never really understood what his appeal was. I was never that guy. So when I'm looking at this and it's a comic book movie, I get it that he's the protagonist. But is he who we're supposed to be rooting for? Because I don't want to root for...
You know, anti-hero. You know, he doesn't play by the rules. He gets shit done.
Yeah. And if he murders people.
Yeah, and if he murders a couple of mostly bad people, or at least people that are worse than him, then that's what we like. Because anti-hero,
I think that's what it is, too, because there's no good person in this movie as far as I can tell. Eddie Brock is not inherently a good person. He never was in the comic books. He was an asshole. So for them to try to get this movie off the ground where it's like we're supposed to be sympathetic and cheering for Eddie Brock, a.k.a. Venom, the dude who literally eats people and murders people, and the only counterpoint to that are people who are worse than him. I don't know what you want me to do with that. What am I supposed to do with that? And I don't get it. And I really am almost kind of angry at this movie for being the way that it is. I kind of am really mad at it. I think I'm going to sit this one out just in form of general protest. Like, I won't go see it because I really just do not care. I will look up the Wikipedia plot. I do not need a Venom movie in my life, especially when the whole appeal of the character of Venom is his counterpoint is fucking Spider-Man, and you can't do Spider-Man. What are we doing here if there's no Spider-Man? This doesn't make any sense. It's like I don't get it, and I don't. Are either of you particularly huge Venom fans at all?
Not really.
One time I was really. Even remotely into Venom was back in the early 90s, and even that was brief. The only version of Venom that I've truly liked is when it was Flash Thompson.
Yeah, that's
about it. Yeah. Otherwise, I was just like, just not a big fan of him.
Because the only thing about Venom that I think, you know, at least the Eddie Brock iteration that is interesting is that he knows everything about Peter Parker, and that's what makes him a threat to the character. And they can't do that here. I don't know what they're trying to achieve, and it confuses me. And it does.
Well, remember, and if I remember correctly, and I didn't really read the book, but Venom had his own run during the 90s, and that book lasted for a bit. You know, never read issue the first. And I remember when that book came out with, I think it was one of the foil emboss with the special
Venom is a total
card and all that crap. You know, I imagine that for most of his run, it's not like he went up against Spider-Man. He was just out, like I said, being the anti-hero. You know, the guy who, and trying to figure out how he wants to probably kill and eat Spider-Man. He's coming across somebody way worse, so let me take care of this while I figure out how to take care of that. And that probably was, like, you know, the sum total of everything else that he did during that book. So I imagine that's what they're kind of sort of aiming for here, minus the fact that Spider-Man doesn't exist. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because this is being produced by Sony. This isn't Marvel Cinematic being involved.
Right, and not only that, but he doesn't even have the white emblem on the chest, you know.
He's got none of that.
He's got nothing. So basically, he's just a tall black. Shut up. He's just a tall black boogeyman with juicy looking skin and big ass teeth and eyes.
I don't think it speaks good about the movie that one of the first like PR campaigns they had after the trailer was released was like, design your own Venom or redesign Venom, because then that's what Todd McFarlane did immediately. He jumped into the fray and he redesigned the Venom in the trailer to look more like the comic book iteration. And, you know, who better than Todd McFarlane? But, I mean, when you openly invite people to sort of reconceptualize what you've already done, what are you doing? And then on top of that, let's talk about the actual content of the trailer for a second. First of all, what the fuck is going on with Tom Hardy's accent? I mean, we discussed it a little bit beforehand, but Taser, you live in New York.
Allegedly. Maybe.
does Eddie Brock, who is a born and bred New Yorker, sound like he is from New York in this trailer?
He doesn't sound like a New Yorker. What he sounds like is somebody from the Eastern Seaboard who's got issues. That's really what I think Tom Hardy came up with, because the only way for you to tell that somebody's from New York is if they do the Brooklyn accent, you know.
From Brooklyn, you know.
Which is, you know, a kind of a little bend away from what might be considered the Bostonian accent. You know,
The land without an R, so to speak.
You know?
Yeah.
But if it's not anything as heavily accented as that, then a New York accent is what you speak, Brian. Not so much John, because John still, a lot of his local colloquialisms still kind of pepper his speech pattern. But, you know, you can tell
what
that.
What are you talking about?
Oh my God!
But no, I'm just saying. So you can tell that John's not from New York. Brian sounds like he could be from, you know,
anywhere in the Northeast. Really?
Well, no, I was gonna say you could be from Manhattan. You know?
Oh, really? Manhattan. I sound like sophisticated like that.
Manhattan people from Manhattan aren't sophisticated, and they don't sound that way either.
Oh, really?
Manhattanites don't say. There is no Manhattanite. You know what makes a Manhattanite? What they talk about.
I didn't say Manhattanite.
What I'm saying is what they talk about, and not so much how. That's a Manhattanite.
Fair enough.
Eddie Brock sounds like, you know, somebody with an issue. You know, that needs some help. Not so much. Because
to me, all he sounds like is a British guy trying to do a New York accent, and it really is troubling because I can't get past it. It's so jarring, even more jarring than his Bane. It's just, I can't do with him.
Nobody cared who I was before I put on the symbiote. Then they cared.
I was born in the darkness. I've been carnage before carnage was carnage.
And on top of that, apparently the trailer confirms there's like four or five lower tier symbiotes also running around this movie other than Venom.
Fuck that.
Which I'm like, fuck, I'm out already. I don't give a shit about Venom. Does anybody here give a shit about Venom, honestly? Unless he's squared up against...
But I honestly, I'm going to go see the movie. I'm just going to make sure that I pay the cheapest matinee price I can.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was an article that posted earlier in the week. And, you know, I don't know what this says, but Topher Grace gave his seal of approval for the Venom. So I'm like, I don't think that carries. I think that might actually work against it.
From the shittiest movie of the original trilogy. No, thank you.
So then, moving on from that, despite the fact that Venom looks shaky at best, the Sony Spider-Verse is moving right along. Some bad news to start things off with. There was a movie in development called Silver and Black, which is about Silver Sable and the Black Cat, mercenary and thief, respectively. A lot of cheesecake going on there. That has since been scrapped. The movie that is definitively in the works is a movie about Kraven the Hunter. It's in the works by a writer from Sony, Richard Wenk, who worked on The Equalizer 2, which I personally like the first one better, but that's just me.
Seconded.
Yeah, so Kraven the Hunter is in the works for his own movie, his own solo feature. And then the next movie rumored to be getting the green light is Jackpot. You guys remember Jackpot?
Wait, what?
Jackpot? You remember Jackpot? She was the redhead superhero with the 777 across her belt buckle. She looked like a disco-era superhero, and she was
never
like...
Never heard of her.
The chick that died?
Exactly. She was mostly something after One More Day happened and The Initiative and all that stuff.
That's why.
And, it was... They were teasing it for a long time that it was Mary Jane Watson, which it was not. It was actually two different characters. One was named Sarah Errett, who was a geneticist who developed some sort of super thing at Oscorp, and she became a superhero. And then she retired and gave the powers over to another woman. Her name was Alana Jobson, and she relied on MGH for her powers, and both of them were members of the Initiative. And then nobody ever talked about it again because it was a stupid publicity stunt and nobody really cared. But apparently Jackpot is rumored to be the next greenlit project over for Spider-Man, Sony Spider-Verse movie universe type thing. I mean, look, I didn't really care one way about Silver and Black. I don't have really strong feelings about either character. Kraven, admittedly, piques my interest. I do think Kraven is endlessly fascinating. I think he is... someone who can work outside of the confines of being a direct villain, unlike Venom. And I think Jeffrey Dean Morgan should play him, but that's just me. But Jackpot, holy shit. Look, the whole thing about Jackpot was she was a tease. It was Mary Jane Watson, and Mary Jane Watson is Zendaya in the Spider-Verse. So what are we doing with this? I don't understand.
That's in the MCU. I bet you Jackpot will probably be in the Sony-verse.
Yeah, they will. But they've also gone to great lengths to state that despite the fact there wouldn't be any direct crossover, at least not immediately, there isn't really stepping on anybody's toes between universes. So for all intents and purposes, Tom Holland's Spider-Man is Spider-Man in the Sony Spider-Verse. They're not going to – they can't recast him. They can't do their own Spider-Man. So for the time being, they're playing by the rules of, yeah, we're just kind of a dark, quiet corner and, you know, we're not – we're not directly in conflict with the MCU, but we're also not stepping on their toes. So that having been said, you know, again, it comes back to, well, you know, if you're going to fit these together, how is that going to go and what will that look like? And frankly, the only one of the bunch I'm really excited about is Kraven the Hunter. Like I said, I think Jeffrey Dean Morgan would do an awesome Kraven the Hunter, but that's just me.
Taking it like a champ.
Anyway. Oh, God, I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan. But yeah, so I that's the only one I really care about. Silver and Black, it's sad to see it go, but to replace it with Jackpot is just stupid. No one's going to care. What about you guys? What do you think of the bunch? That bunch of Sony Spider movie news, what have you?
Go, John.
Absolutely, I have absolutely no fucks to give.
No fucks to give.
No fucks to give. Sorry, I just don't.
All right. Taser seconded.
Not exactly. Not entirely. Anyway.
Okay.
With Jackpot, that's all kinds of like, what the fuck? I mean, just what the fuck? You know, Jackpot wasn't even that big of a character when she was a character. You know,
nope.
Who was blowing who to get that passed? That's what I want to know. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, anyway, that's just some dumb shit right there. Kraven the Hunter, the only way they can do a Kraven the Hunter movie is if, tell me Tom Holland is in it. Because without Spider-Man, then who the fuck cares? I mean, how do you introduce a villain in a movie by himself, or rather, an origin story that's the villain story, and you don't have the hero? You know,
find out this October when Venom releases in theaters nationwide.
No, remember, anti-hero, completely different.
Fuck out of here with that anti-hero bullshit.
He's an anti-hero.
You want anti-hero Venom? There's anti-Venom.
Guess what? Okay. Wolverine is an anti-hero. Punisher is an anti-hero.
Oh, you and I may know that, but that's not how they're treated. They're treated like heroes, and they're given the hero treatment. You know it, I know it, everybody else knows.
But I'm talking about look at the movies. Well, the movies, you can argue Wolverine, yes. Punisher, no. On Netflix, anti-hero.
I would argue Punisher is probably more of a hero than Venom just because he never goes looking for trouble and everybody comes at him trying to kill him. If anything, he's just killing in self-defense.
During Daredevil season 2 is an anti-hero. Punisher at the beginning of his own series. Okay, you have a point there, but once shit is rolling, anti-hero. Okay.
So you're gonna say the dude who was eating people is on par with the Punisher? Seriously?
Remember, the dude that was eating people, wasn't that Max Gargan? I don't think that was Eddie.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Venom basically threatened to eat somebody in the trailer. We don't see that dude again.
Right. But what we're talking about, what one does, you know, the differences between two people using the same organism. You know, what one does and what one doesn't do. I don't think Eddie Brock ate people. I'm not going to say that with 100%, you know, clarity here. I'm not sure, but I don't think he ate people. Max Gargan... We're talking to fucking Scorpion here. So that's completely, you know, that's just him being extra kinky and I don't know what the fuck. But, you know, why not? You know, the Max Gargan, he ate people as, you know, Venom. Oh, fucking K. As long as we don't see it, we can just work with the whole gruesome aspect and people will love it. Because, again, anti-hero.
Whatever.
I'm just saying.
So so get back to your point about Kraven, man.
Kraven doesn't work if there's no Spider-Man. I mean, what's the point? He's a hunter. There's nobody special for him to hunt because that was the whole point of him going after Spider-Man. Because he was somebody special that actually gave him a challenge. That was why he did it. So unless you have, I don't know, Captain America, then what's the fucking point?
Maybe you could introduce a few of the more animal-themed rogues from Spider-Man's gallery.
Like Scorpion?
Rhino? You could... I mean, granted, Vulture was already used. But
he breaks Vulture out and goes after him.
Ooh, Tiger Shark! He could do Tiger Shark.
That's a Namor guy. And Tiger Shark would slaughter him. Tiger Shark would absolutely slaughter... Tiger Shark goes... Trades blows with Namor.
Tiger Shark couldn't beat Bullseye. He's going to beat Kraven the Hunter. Okay.
The only way Tiger Shark doesn't beat Bullseye is somebody was high on drugs and the editor wasn't paying attention.
Come to think of it, I think it was on Deadpool, so it's probably for the...
So then there you go. Okay.
Fair enough. All right, so then in terms of the bunch, you have, you know, Kraven is really the only one that would pique your interest, kind of.
I have to see what they want to do with him. You know, I really do. If it's just kind of like Kraven is going to be killing people because he's training to do whatever, and then go up against Spider-Man, maybe in a movie. I need to hear what they're going to do with him before I get excited.
Maybe you could set him up and have it like he develops his skills, and then at the very end, he catches sight of like Spider-Man, and he goes to try and hunt him down. Ooh, you know what you could do? And granted, I don't know if they could do this. You could see if you could borrow the Savage Land and dump him in the Savage Land. That'd be pretty dope.
No, actually, you know what we could do? You could use Kraven Goes After Punisher.
Oh. Ooh, dude. Oh, my God. That is actually really fucking good. I like that.
That Punisher is the runner-up for him to go after Spider-Man.
Yeah, no shit. Manhunting Man, the most dangerous game.
You
know?
Now, as for the rest of it, Silver Sable and Black Cat, the movie that never was. I like Silver Sable. I like the idea of Silver Sable. You know, her and her family, you know, hunted Nazis because the Nazis were especially really fucking cruel to her country back during World War II.
Right.
It's a family thing to hunt them down. But she also hunts other big time.
Yeah, she's a mercenary. She runs in the same circles as Deadpool for all intents and purposes.
That would be really cool. Having her go up against Black Cat, really? No. And them being in a movie together, no. Because you know they're going to end up making it a buddy thing at some point because that's what Hollywood does. And they might, you could theoretically come up with a story that might work, but it's still wrong. You know, Silver Sable is somebody that I wouldn't introduce in a Spider-Man movie. I would introduce her in, like, maybe an Avengers movie that involves, like, Red Skull or some shit. Like, maybe she may catch wind that Red Skull is off of that planet from Avengers Infinity War and he's back on Earth somehow. And I now have a chance to get the greatest one of all time or whatever the fuck. Black Cat does not deserve a movie.
Fair enough. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah. So.
No.
All right. Fair enough. John Boy, anything to add before we move along?
Not really. Other than I saw a disturbing deal on Facebook a while back when, you know, I don't know if it was Screen Rant or one of the other ones covering, but they said that Sony has like access to like over 400 Marvel characters due to the Spidey, and I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
I can just imagine what they're going to try to pull out of their ass. If I see
Prowler the movie.
Well, that's more likely than I would see Rocket Racer.
I was just going to say him.
If I see that, I'm going to be like, really? You're pulling some really...
We didn't even talk about the Morbius living vampire movie that is let's just come to terms with the facts.
That's something a little decent, at least. I could...
We are not getting into this.
Okay, let me float this.
What was the one with where Spider-Man played all the different heroes for a while and then they became their own super team? The
animated series?
No, it was an actual deal that happened in the mid-90s where Spider-Man had to change into different costume to act like he was a different hero.
I don't fucking know.
And it was like the kicker or... You know who I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
What, you're not talking about when he was trying out different things with the webbing? Like when he made the web armor Spider-Man, that kind of
shit? No. When he actually was playing literally different...
Like Captain America?
When he...
He was trying to be different vigilantes? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't.
I've never even heard of that. So
no, I don't remember.
I'd have to go back and look. God help me if I do.
Oh my God,
Jesus! Yeah, let's save that for another episode. Jesus.
I want to see Morbius the movie. I'm saying it. I want to see Morbius the movie. Morbius the movie.
Nobody wants to see Morbius the movie.
As a matter of fact, you can put Morbius in Kraven the Hunter's movie. There you go. That's who he hunts. That's his training for Spider-Man.
That's kind of taking away Blade's thunder, isn't it? I mean, Blade only has so much to do.
I've come after you, Morbius.
Can you imagine Kraven the Hunter fights, hunts down Blade? Kraven's dead. I don't care what you say.
Kraven would get...
Blade would murder the fuck out of him. right, moving right along. We got some comic book news because, hey, if we're a Marvel podcast, we might as well discuss comic books. It was recently announced that they're going to be launching a 10-part weekly storyline across the X-Men books, beginning with Uncanny X-Men number one, called X-Men Disassembled. It's going to be written by Ed Brisson, Kelly Thompson, and Matt Rosenberg, illustrated by Mahmoud Azrar, RB Silva, Yildiray Sinrar, and covers by Lionel Yu. And, yeah, so basically what we're getting here is, and I'll read you the actual synopsis verbatim. Here it comes. Quote, X-Men Disassembled brings together nearly every mutant left on Earth in a story that threatens to destroy them. An epic tale of mystery and tragic disappearance with an adventure so earth-shattering it could very well be the X-Men's final mission. End quote. And issue number one drops on November 14th. Again, this will be weekly leading up through the 10-part series. We got some promotional artwork with the tagline, "No one survives the experience," which is, of course, a play on the classic X-Men line, "Hope you survive the experience." The only major X-Men characters who aren't featured on the key art are the original five X-Men, their teenage versions that are currently stuck in the present day. That's currently being dealt with in their own storyline called Extermination. And the adult version of Cyclops, who is still dead in the main continuity. So, yeah, what's going to happen in this rousing tale of possible extinction for the X-Men, you guys? Ooh.
Isn't this basically X-Men the End? That's what it sounds like to me.
I mean, it's called Disassembled.
Yeah. Taser. But like I said, this sounds like X-Men the End, where it has every mutant left alive and some will die and stuff Jesus. Happens and space adventure and whee! Yeah, oh my God. I think I read this already. I think I read this like five times already. Yeah.
Fair enough. So you're not. Yeah. So you're not excited is what you're saying?
I what I'm saying is I haven't heard anything to make me excited because this sounds like almost every other X-Men adventure ever for like the last 25 years.
To be fair, there are only like 10 basic X-Men plots, so you're probably right. You know. But I get what you're saying, and I mean the talent on it at least has me at attention. I like Kelly Thompson.
Lionel
I really
Yu,
like Rosenberg.
I'll give that credit, you know, because I do like.
He's only cover art though. He's not doing interiors.
Then you know, I don't give a rat's ass.
Yeah, all right, same. I mean, same. I love Lionel Yu, but if he does interior work, that's more my bag. But yeah, I mean, I love Rosenberg. He's a local boy. I love, I love Kelly Thompson. She did good work. She does good work. What am I saying? And Ed Brisson is really good. I mean, he did the Iron Fist run that I was reading through, and I kind of stopped when the whole Damnation Doctor Strange event happened. But he had a good run on Iron Fist. He's doing good work, so I don't see why this event wouldn't be interesting. I think the more interesting aspect of it is that Jean Grey is at the forefront of it again, you know, because that's been a while since she was anything. I mean, she's only on the front of the key art, but I have to assume she's involved in some way since she's, you know, she's like the only 05 X-Men in a leadership position on a real team, not even like the little teeny bopper tweens or whatever. You know? I mean, I'll check it out because I'm a sucker for the X-Men. But what about you guys? I mean, obviously, am I just to assume based on your lack of enthusiasm, you just don't care anymore? Is that about it?
No, but I haven't.
Okay, for John, it's true.
But I, again, like the Kraven movie, I haven't heard anything that makes me go, oh, yeah, I want to read that. Like I said, this sounds like shit that I've read before for, like, the last 25 years. There's no real specifics. It's just all kind of catchphrases and buzzwords, you know?
Fair
like,
enough.
Give me some details. So
if the story takes shape, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, I'm confident I'll give it a go when it comes around. So, but, yeah, it's I'll give it a shot. Anything else between you guys before we move on to the next segment?
Nope.
I'm good. French fries.
We're not going to give you French fries. Moving right along, it's a shame that our dear leader could not be here because we actually have a book of the week for once. Holy shit.
Yay!
We are reviewing Fantastic Four number one, written by Dan Slott, illustrated by Sarah Pacelli, with a backup feature written by Dan Slott, illustrated by Simone Bianchi. So, I'll just kick things off with a brief synopsis. Basically, what we have is Ben Grimm and Alicia Masters, and Johnny Storm and Wyatt Wingfoot. They're in their own little separate stories to kick off with. You know, Ben is just spending time with Alicia, and Johnny's hanging out with Wyatt at a Mets game because he's a true New Yorker, and any true New Yorker is a Mets fan. So.
Yeah, no.
I love it. I love that Johnny's a fucking Mets fan. Oh, my God. That makes me so happy. But, yeah, so they're doing their thing, and all of a sudden the signal flare goes up with the Fantastic Four. Ben sees it and immediately shies away from it. Johnny sees it, immediately thinks Reed and Sue are back and the kids. And Johnny rushes off to try and, you know, figure out what's going on, but turns out it's just some kids from Yancey Street. They broke into Ben Grimm's house and stole the classic signal flare. And, you know, while he's off investigating that, Ben Grimm is sort of lamenting to Alicia that he knows in his heart they're gone and they won't be coming back. And he's in depression, basically, in terms of the five stages of denial. And Johnny Storm is in denial, moving up through anger, as you'll see later on the issue. We get a brief news hit with all sorts of auxiliary Fantastic Four members, including Medusa, Crystal, Luke Cage, and Jen Walters, sort of giving their piece on what they think about the Fantastic Four's absence, considering the anniversary of their rocket launch is coming up. And, you know, it's just sort of setting the tone as to how the Marvel Universe, I think at large, feels about the Fantastic Four not being together as a family anymore, you know? And we get a brief aside where Ben Grimm is talking to Shecky, who is very clearly Stan Lee, in case you missed it. Stan Lee cameos. But yeah, so he narrates a tale to Shecky about how the Four were lost in space once upon a time. And there was this magical stone that was brought to life by singing. There's a lovely, funny bit about who has the best voice for singing among the Fantastic Four. And Ben sort of was allowed to keep that stone, you know, a part of the stone by the person who helped guide them back, the stone that helped them find home again. And Ben sort of takes it as a sign, all the events of the day, he takes it as a sign. And he goes and he proposes to Alicia Masters. And she says yes, and they're going to get married.
Yay!
Hooray! Now, forgive my ignorance, but have they ever been married before, or have they always
her and Johnny Storm were actually...
Oh, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about that. I know about that.
It was a stinking scroll.
Yeah, it was a stinking scroll.
Yeah, it was a stinking scroll.
Yeah. Damn scrolls! But
she wasn't that stinking because Johnny was enjoying it.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he was.
And you don't stop.
Oh, my God. So Ben proposes, Alicia says yes, and they call Johnny over to celebrate, and Ben asks Johnny if he'll be his best man, and Johnny says no! And it's like, what the fuck? And Johnny says he's saying no because the only person who should be the best man at Benjamin J. Grimm's wedding is Reed Richards. This leads Ben to sort of get pissed at him. Be like, look, we looked all over the multiverse. They're not out there. They're dead and they're not coming back. Johnny still refuses to believe it. He flies up into the sky, screams into the universe, come back, Reed, Sue, show me a sign that you're still here. And nothing happens. And he sort of deflatedly goes back to Ben and Alicia. And he sort of accepts it as that they're really gone. And then we get a brief aside with Sue and Reed, who are talking amongst themselves, and they're saying that together they can do anything, but what they need to do is, at this point, with all of New York and all of the world watching, they light up a huge four in the sky, giving a call out to the Fantastic Four.
Outside of the planet's atmosphere.
Outside of the planet's atmosphere.
In near-Earth orbit, it was a huge fucking four.
It's bigger than the planet, dare I say. And... so that's the main feature, and then there is a backup feature set in course in Latveria and Doomstadt, which is the return of Victor Von Doom as a right and proper villain, or in this case, a hero to his people. Latveria has been under constant siege by strong men and mercenaries and would-be dictators, and this one woman what is her name? Her name is Zora Vukovic.
Yeah, Vukovic.
Yeah, yeah. She finds Doom, who's just kind of hanging out in the pits of his castle. And apparently his face has been scarred again. And at this point, I think, like I should say, Marvel 2-in-1 is still running the Johnny and Ben story at this point. So whatever story happens in there has already concluded by the continuity of this book. So you're going to have to contend with that for a few months because that story is still ways out.
And Doom got his face scarred in Iron Man 600 or whatever the last one was. That was.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
It was Bendis's last, you know, work for on Iron Man. I guess he went, nope, I'm taking that away. He's back to being Bud Ugly again.
Fair enough. Well, the real only point of that is that Doom is once again seizing control of Latveria, and he's back to being Doom again. And, you know, that's kind of it. And then there's a one-page mini comic illustrated by Scotty Young at the very, very back featuring Impossible Dog.
Yay!
Mr. Impossible, who got really upset because he's like, why would you call Fantastic Four if the four aren't reunited? And then he gets delivered a letter by Marvel that says they'll be back together in the next issue. And he says, well, okay, but I'm watching you. And it transforms into Uatu the Watcher.
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, you know what? So, that was done. That was done because they paid attention to what happened with Batman.
Yeah, I'm also willing to bet it was probably because they were trying to quell any outrage, a la Steve Rogers Captain America, where they did a huge thing, and then it's like, well, that wasn't what I was expecting, and then death threats were leveled against the guy. So you probably want to avoid that a second time around too.
Yeah, fair enough.
But who can say?
Hydra.
John Boy, why don't you take lead on this one? What did you think of the Fantastic Four issue number one? Go ahead.
I was actually happy. I was a little upset that, you know, we didn't get to see their full reunion in the first one, especially for instance, you're paying $5.99 for the damn thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
But it's setting everything up, and I have higher hopes for this one on this with Slott on it than I did initially with, you know, him doing Iron Man. I have, you know, he's doing better so far on Iron Man, but it'll seem to be more of his niche, so to speak.
Yeah.
Since he's written, he's got everybody's voice.
Yeah. So he's very much like the New York scene of heroes. Like, never the mind the fact he did Spider-Man for years and years and years, but you know, I feel like it's a good spot. It's a good transition for him.
It's a good start, and I'll give it a. Definitely got it on my pull list for right now because I've been waiting for Fantastic Four to come back for years, you know, and
so say we all.
Yep. And I hope that they do it right and do it and things keep going the way it is. I give it a 4 out of 4, so to speak.
Yes, that's correct.
So, and besides, I'm just glad to see the ever-loving blue-eyed, you know, idol of millions back with, you know, his
Lois Lane, his Black Canary, his sort of it really kind of is. I mean, name another woman you could picture him with.
And well, She-Hulk, maybe, if she wasn't so screwed up right now.
No, Lady Thing, Miss
Lady Thing. Yep.
Yeah,
Lady
Thing. No.
I like Sharon Ventura. I liked her.
Oh my god,
I did too.
Jesus, Sharon Ventura. Way to reach for that fucking reference. Holy hell.
Hey. Well, it's like the auburn-haired Spider-Woman. Whatever the fuck happened to her, huh?
Hey, as long as Alicia's got her Rocky Road.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets Rocky Road every night. Anyway.
I'm just reminded. Oh, my God.
You guys see what happens when we don't have the grown-up in charge, folks?
Yeah. Well, God damn it. I'm trying to be the grown-up, but I'm the youngest out of all you motherfuckers, so that ain't working. Holy hell.
Yeah, but the sad thing is I have more hair than you. That's really what's sad.
Hi-oh!
Sorry, I had to go there.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I make those jokes about myself nowadays. It's an inevitability. But, yeah, I mean, who knows? Given Dan Slott's penchant for liking obscure minutia about the past of certain characters, because that's what he did a lot of that on Spider-Man, maybe Sharon Ventura will turn up at some point to throw a wrench into the engagement. Who can say? Who knows?
You know, you but have a point there, Professor X. Definitely.
oh my god.
It took a while.
Oh my god. Now, you listen here, Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin, okay? Don't get shitty with me.
know what makes me Derek? It makes me Ben
Appleton. Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
Or am I the 1990s Captain America from the movie?
Holy shit. Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
I guess I should go.
So, yeah, who knows what the fuck's going to happen. But, Taser, you go ahead and you take it from here, man. What did you think of Fantastic Four, number one?
I got to admit, I didn't enjoy it as much. Like I had told John over Twitter, and he told me he had already read it. Getting one panel, you know, getting that little a dose of Reed and Sue, that bothered me, especially for the first issue. I kind of get what it was. Dan Slott who wrote this, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was Dan Slott.
So like I said, Dan Slott. I kind of get what he was going for, but he took way too much of that book to tell the where Johnny and Ben are at before Reed and Sue come back. He took too much time for that. That should have all been done in like three maybe four pages, and the rest of it them trying to help Reed and Sue get back. I honestly do feel that, because having a Fantastic Four number one, and it only qualifies as such because you have them on like the last page, that bothered me. It really did. I can't help it. That's why I cheered so much for the Scotty Young Impossible Man thing, because he's like, yes, that's exactly how I feel upon reading this fucking book. You know, it wasn't awful. I just feel cheated. You know, I feel a bit cheated. The art was fine. It touched on a couple of things, you know, like, oh, fucking, he's back with Alicia. Yay. I really don't care too much for her, I'm gonna be perfectly honest. I don't care about Ben Grimm having a steady, you know, love interest. I do not care. Same thing with Johnny, whether he has a girlfriend or not, I do not care. I just care about the team and the shit that they need to do to show me fantastic visuals, interesting locales, and trouble. Give me that. Don't give me domestic issues. Fuck you. I don't want that. The scene with Shulky and Wyatt going, hey, Wyatt, you're looking pretty good. Hey, Jen, you're looking pretty good yourself. I'm like, oh, they're doing this shit again. Just fuck already. You know, and I was trying to figure out who that was, because Wyatt Wingfoot, you know, he's supposed to be a native, and he didn't look anything like what I think he should look like. And the two of them arm in arm at that Met game, I was getting a bit confused. I'm like, hey, y'all a little too much bromancy here. You know, what are we doing? You know, what's going on? And then they're roommates, I think. Because didn't it? I think they mentioned that in that book, that they were roommates.
Who, Johnny?
I think Wyatt called them roomie. So
yeah, I think there was an article a little while back where I think Wyatt bought the Baxter Building, or somebody bought the Baxter Building.
Holy shit! Okay. Well,
you know what? Actually, I think that might have been Peter Parker back when he was on his Steve Jobs shit. So I think that's different. But okay. I think he is living with Wyatt Wingfoot, if nothing else.
Fair enough. So yeah, that was an interesting development. You know, it's a bit of a callback to like older stuff. So okay, fine, whatever. I was kind of looking for Moon Girl to show up, because they were in her book for a bit, you know, trying to get her to be the new leader of the team, and I just felt embarrassed that you mean to tell me that Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm are looking to this fucking 10-year-old to try to be their new leader? Are you fucking kidding me? But sure as shit, I was waiting for her to show up in this book. So you know, that happened, and you know, the fucking engagement, yay, woo. I don't care. I don't hate it. I just don't care.
God, get over your cynicism, old man. Be happy for a fucking change. What's wrong with you?
First of all, how the fuck is he gonna do anything to her? You know, as soon as he drops Trout and tries to get in, he's scraping her to hell.
I mean, you're asking a lot of questions nobody ever really bothered to ask in the comics, man.
Really? Like, just like Superman and Lois Lane, you know he's killing her every night and probably bringing her back to life.
Oh, my God. Are we really getting into a fucking Mallrats argument? Are you shitting me right now? Yes. Just live in the moment, man. It's love. It's beautiful, you know?
Okay, so I'll move it along. We get to the Doctor... The fucking Doctor Strange. Doctor Doom. The Doctor Doom segment. And John answered it, but I was of the question exactly how the hell did he end up like this anyway? But, you know, I didn't read... What was it? Infernal Iron Man or whatever the fuck they called that?
Yeah,
that old shit. Yay, Doctor Doom is back. Yay. Doctor Doom is back. Woo. Doctor Doom, you know what? Doctor Doom, I'm never happy with Doctor Doom because Doctor Doom has, for most of my entire reading career, has managed to win by getting away. That just annoys the hell out of me. And John just went somewhere.
I think so.
Okay.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, he was running short on time anyway. I was trying to get us up to the individual reviews, but that didn't work out.
So, yeah. And, the Impossible Man thing, that was my favorite part of the book. I love that whole thing, that one page. That one page, you know, kind of meant it all to me. So, yeah, I guess if I had to give it a rating, I'd give it a...
It's out of 4, because we're keeping with the theme.
So then I'd give it a 2.1 out of 4.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my Lord. Okay, whatever. You're going to be that way. You know what?
Yes.
My turn now, because I've been waiting patiently, sir.
I'm sorry.
Ugh. Yeah, looks like John's Wi-Fi got shut off. We'll miss you, John.
No, we won't, you old man.
We'll talk to you next 2 weeks, pal. Love you. Okay, where was I? I think I was reviewing Fantastic Four. I was trying to.
Yes. Yeah.
Fair enough. I thought it was dope. I dug it. I loved it. You know, I definitely wanted to see the Fantastic Four all back at once, and I felt kind of cheated that we didn't get that. But I am also of the mind where the buildup makes the story even better, so I'm okay with it having taken an issue or two. In this case, it'll just be next issue, so that'll be fine. I love that Ben proposed to Alicia. I love that we're getting some more of that. Because, you know, that's really the thing, too. Fantastic Four is, first and foremost, a family, and I feel like Dan Slott captured that really, really well with this issue. You know, you have Johnny and Wyatt hanging out like brothers. You have Ben and Alicia taking that next step towards becoming their own family, including adopting cats, which she named Rocky and Adrian.
That made me smile. I'll admit that. That made me smile. I could help but grin at that one.
that was great. But yeah, so I mean, I really love that they seem to have captured the family vibe and the fact that, yeah, it didn't happen in the first issue, but they know what you want. They want the family reunited, and they're working to get it back on track. So I'm really excited to see that finally happen. And I'm still reading Marvel 2-in-1. I'm digging that story as well. But this is what Fantastic Four should feel like, because that moment where everybody looks up in the sky and sees the Fantastic Four logo and knows what it means and who it is, and they know. And that, to me, says everything you need to know about the Fantastic Four's place in Marvel, not just in the comic books, but in the popular consciousness, because when they went away, people were upset that they went away.
Well, I mean, look at when Johnny was flying around, you know, when he saw the Fantastic Four signal, and as he was passing by all those buildings and people looking out, and they're going, "Yeah, Johnny, that's right. Woo, it's back. It's good to see them back. Woo." New Yorkers don't do that. No, New Yorkers don't do that shit at all. But
the New Yorkers in the Marvel universe do.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But, you know, it did kind of show that I think more so than any other, you know, team in the Marvel universe, the Fantastic Four are accessible like that. Because, you know, they don't have secret identities. They are who they are. And, you know, they go to shows and they're public and, you know, they don't hide anything, whereas everybody else, you know, they've got, you know, the secret identity and what have you. So I can see within the context of Marvel Earth, not having, you know, the full Fantastic Four, you know, show up for whatever the hell. Yeah, there might be, you know, people clamoring and being happy that it looks like the team's getting back together. So, you know, yeah, I get that. You know, I just like I said, it wasn't enough. That last panel wasn't enough for me for this book. You know, I wish that they had gone a different route and maybe shortened what they had done to give me more Reed and Sue. You know?
Right. I gotcha. Well, we'll get that next issue. And we sort of got that with the flashback, too. Don't forget, there was the little flashback bit, which did work well, I thought. I
recall Central Park. Central Park. Yeah.
The fact where everyone's like, Johnny's got the best voice, and Sue's like, what?
But yeah, she automatically assumed that she did. That was actually funny. I'll give you that. You know.
Well, I thought it was funny because apparently everybody told her she had the best voice, and then when it came down to it, Reed's like, yeah, I gotta steer the ship.
Well, no. Remember who she went to? She went to her husband, and then she went to her son. And her husband Franklin was nice and diplomatic, but her son was like, please, mommy, don't sing.
Yeah. Please don't start singing. Please.
Please don't. You know, you could just see her, you know, that's why they had that one panel with her just all like,
fine.
Like, yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, got put in your place.
It was good. I loved it. I love the family vibe. And, you know, the Doom backup feature is good, too. You know, I do wish there'd been a little more coordination between the story over in Marvel 2 and 1 and this one, because now, I mean, like I said, I'm still going to be picking up Marvel 2 and 1 no matter what, at least while they're still running this story. But as far as like the coordination, it's that thing where Marvel editor is like, okay, we'll finish this here, but we'll start the story back here. So it's like, you know, it's a minor annoyance. But it is something that unfortunately, you know, happens in editorial. I just wish it didn't have to happen here. But regardless of any of that, I thought it was great. I'll be in for the ride to see how the Fantastic Four's return to the Marvel Universe goes. I thought Sarah Pacelli did a decent job on artwork. I didn't think it was the best, but it was good for what it was trying to be. She does a great Ben Grimm. She draws him fantastically. Pun not intended. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing where the story goes. So I will give it a 3 out of 4 solid. That is including the main feature, the Doom backup feature, which I thought lacked weight. You know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, Doom's a villain again. Yay, cool, yeah, whatever. And the Mr. Impossible bitten back was fantastic as well. I thought that was a nice little throw in to be like, hey, here you go. We know what you're asking. We know. Yeah, I'll go 3 out of 4. 3 out of 4 Fantastic Four members for me. I thought it was great. So, all right. That having been said, unfortunately, we did lose John. His raccoon that was running the hamster wheel that powered his internet connection unfortunately passed away. Someone else shot it for their supper. It's very sad. But thankfully, we still have Taser and myself here. And Taser's actually reviewing something this week, which is cool. Or at least, you know, he thinks it's entertaining, I think. I'm not really sure what you think, honestly. So let's dive into what are you reviewing, Taser, for the
individual? Death of the Inhumans. Yay! Honestly, I picked it because none of the other stuff that had been coming out lately was kind of worth it. So I needed to take a gamble on shit. And I had snagged issue number 2, completely forgot that I didn't have issue number 1. And the only reason I snagged number 2 is because it had Death and Inhumans. And I completely forgot that there was actually a thing, you know, Death of the Inhumans. So I went, oh yeah, that's right, there's that shit. Well, maybe I should read the first one. I didn't grab the first one, so I had to go find some place to grab the first one. I'm enjoying this book because they actually killing a whole lot of Inhumans.
Really?
Yes.
Are all the killings as bullshit as the one of the Inhumans television show, or is it more logical than that?
We lost 3 in issue 1. We lost 3.
Really?
3 okay. Notable.
What's the body count so far? Who did we lose?
Oh, well, okay. They got rid of all 4 of the tribes that Hickman introduced in Fantastic Four. You know,
they got rid of them.
They're gone. Goodbye.
The Universal Inhumans.
The prophecy, whatever the fucks, the queens to the king.
His little harem.
They're
or whatever
gone.
The fuck.
They're gone, and they were gone and gone painfully. I think the guy who wrote this, I forgot what's his name. I think it's
Rosenberg, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it's Sewell, one of those.
No, it's something else. It has an S in it, and it's a shorter name, but it's not Sewell. Fuck it, I don't care.
I'll look it up for you while you're doing that.
The guy didn't. I think he disliked them as an idea as much as I did. So yeah, all four of them got slaughtered in the same area.
Oh no! Donnie Cates is writing that.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I've never heard of them before either, so this is my first touch of their work. Whether they're male or female, I don't even know.
Donnie Cates is a male. He wrote Thanos Wins, that Thanos storyline I reviewed a few issues of back. He was the guy behind that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and he's also writing Cosmic Ghost Rider, which I'm going to review up next. And I think he also took over writing duties for Doctor Strange, if I'm not mistaken.
Then Benny would know about that.
Yeah. Fair enough. he's one of the new hotness in Marvel's writer room as of late.
He's the new hotness. Yeah, baby. So then that being said, like I said, he got rid of them, and then he introduced he got rid of Ronan, he got rid of the Supreme Intelligence, he introduced a new Kree commander that they haven't really introduced. His uniform is something new. It's gray and white with rings, and then this weird insignia in the center, you know, and he's taller than a regular Kree. He's about a good 2.5-3 feet taller. You know, he was some kind of explorer that went out to explore and came back and said, "Oh my God, what the hell happened to Hala?" And I didn't know that Hala had been blown up. Apparently that happened in some X-Men Avengers thing or Guardians of the Galaxy thing or some shit like that.
I don't know. I haven't been as touch with the cosmic side of Marvel as lately as I would.
Well, it happened, and Hala in this book is like just a big kind of chunk of rock, you know.
Okay, scorched earth. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Big piece of rock. So they got rid of the Supreme Intelligence, got rid of Ronan, and apparently The new Inhumans? Remember those people? The young people?
The super team, like the X-Men ripoffs?
Yeah,
they were
none of them were in this book at all. None of them. I don't know what the hell happened with them. None of them made an appearance. None of them.
I'll try to contain my disappointment then they didn't make it out. So
goodbye and see you later. Don't miss you. But what we do have is we've kind of come into the story as it's already been happening, and Black Bolt is kind of, you know, going through the events in his head. You know, all the deaths that have occurred because the Kree has just been hitting everybody, join or die. There was a group of Inhumans that weren't aligned with Black Bolt or anybody else. They just kind of wanted to be doing their own thing. And the Kree said, "Nope, fuck you, die, because you won't join." So they're leaving bodies everywhere. They're just slaughtering. Like I said, they took out the four queens and their people. And while Black Bolt was going over there to deal with them there, they had gone to Attilan, and they encountered Maximus. And their lead ass-kicker is, I think his name is Husk, and he's wearing some variant of Black Bolt.
Wait, Husk? Like the X-Men character? They're not even trying anymore. Holy shit, the ripoff is real.
I think it is. That I need to double-check. I'll do that because I want to get that right. But,
Paige Guthrie, I think. Husk.
Yeah, so I was right. This guy, he is not to be played with. And he's a super inhuman. Whatever that means, but he kicks ass. And he,
oh, he's a super special awesome.
Yes, he's super special, super special. and he does a thing with his voice. He has no eyes. He's got kind of an inverted tuning fork thing on his forehead. And his mouth guard kind of opens up like the Predators in the movie. It opens up like his. And he fires some kind of discombobulation beam. So he dismantled, well, he removed Maximus's ability to fight. And while he was engaged with him, Black Bolt sent Lockjaw forward to go get Maximus, and then Huss took out both of them. So Lockjaw and Maximus are both gone. And Triton, while they were on the planet where the four queens were, and they found out that they had been all slaughtered, one surviving Inhuman implanted in Triton what had happened with by touch, because, you know, she was special. And then Triton happened to notice, after having divulged what he was given, hey, what's this on your chest? Oh, shit! Hey, everybody, get out! And kablooey. Lockjaw, before he dies over here, Lockjaw managed to get everybody else but Triton back onto the ship, and they were all fucked up even then. Medusa had to be put in a healing chamber, and everybody else is bruised and whatever. Black Bolt himself was hurt. I'm like, an explosion like that, that hurt Black Bolt? Get the fuck out of here, but whatever. So they come to, they go back to Attilan, and they find out one of the most awesome Black Bolt moments ever, for me anyway, is they're flying back, and... You know, they're going, okay, it's going to take us a while to do this, whatever. And it's, you know, they flew so far that Lockjaw can't teleport because it's too far. And they're not moving fast enough. So they sit Black Bolt in a chair facing the rear of the ship. And he throws his power into moving them forward. So basically, he's a super booster engine. He says, go. And the ship... shoom, and they're like, what is it, Crystal and Karnak and everybody else is like, I'm like, holy fuck. Super acceleration. So yeah, so like I said, they sent Lockjaw forward. He gets killed by Husk, him and Maximus, and of course Husk is gone by the time Black Bolt and party get there. Part two is really, they know who's, you know, they know, they, that's where we find, where the two parties meet. Karnak goes to talk terms of surrender with this new, Kree guy and Husk. And, he takes a swing at Husk, and Husk kind of, he dodges it. And then scoops up Karnak like, you know, he's a rookie. And I'm like, oh, that's not good at all. So while he's got him, you know, locked up, and he stabs him in the process because, you know, why the fuck not? Mm-hmm. To show how much of a scrub that he is. You know, the new Kree commander guy, he starts talking about, you know, since you decided to attack me in my own home, you know, during your announcement of surrender, whatever the fuck, and Karnak goes, no, 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 I didn't say we came to surrender. I said my king had a message for you. So while he says this, there's like this heavy explosion, and it's Black Bolt walking to the base and annihilating everybody that he comes across by speaking the names of everybody that's died that he wrote down in this book, and it's in the thousands.
Wow.
Yes. So by the time he gets to you know, where Karnak is, he, like I said, he's got Karnak. Karnak's, you know, been stabbed, and you know, he's like, let him go, take me instead. And Husk goes, okay, and he teleports from behind Karnak to behind Black Bolt, and Black Bolt is caught like, oh my god, he's a teleporter. And in further showing how much of a holy shit, what the fuck is going on moment this book is filled of, he slits Black Bolt's throat.
What?
Yeah, he just while telling him to hush.
What? No.
Excuse me while I rub my nipples. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
No, this book has been a lot of fun. You know, this is Marvel trying to, I guess, jazz up. I really doubt that they wiped the slate clean with the Inhumans because they're too much of a Kirby legacy. But, you know, if they kill off Medusa, I won't be upset. Anyway, it's been a interesting, demented, and totally new Marvel ride. And it's one that I'm actually enjoying. So I will at least be there for the third one, saying I remember the title. And collectively, I'm going to give numbers 1 and 2 4.4 out of 5.
Both of them. Why do you always get to break down the decimal points?
I can't just go whole numbers. It doesn't really work like that with me.
You know? All right, fair enough.
Just saying, but it's worth the pickup. As a matter of fact, though, I would hold off and wait till they do the trade, so then you could get it all at once, and then be able to enjoy all of that Inhuman slaughterhood.
Oh my. All right, fair enough. And moving right along, I'll pick up the reins. Unwittingly, we're giving you two Donnie Cates books to review this week. I will be reviewing Cosmic Ghost Rider number 2.
Yay.
Did you read the first issue by chance?
No, I did not. That did not attract me whatsoever.
You haven't even checked it out?
No.
Okay, good, because I'm really going to love surprising you with the ending. I love it so much. It's so stupid, but it's awesome. I'll get to that. So this picks up in the direct wake of the Thanos win storyline over in the Thanos solo run, which Donnie Cates also wrote. Frank Castle died and then was made the Ghost Rider, and then he was made a Herald of Galactus, so he was empowered by the power cosmic, and then he became the right-hand man of Thanos towards the end of his conquest of the universe. He also has chains made of the bones of Sidorak, and we pick up after he's left Valhalla. At the end of Thanos Wins, he was accepted into Valhalla by Odin as sort of a member of a warrior whose time has sort of gone by, and he's given peace and refuge at last. He was made to do unspeakable things. He was driven insane, and ultimately he was welcomed by Odin into that universe's version of Valhalla. Cut to the first issue where he is subsequently expelled from Valhalla from getting into too many bar fights with some of the people who were there. He carves off the nose of a lesser god. It gets Odin's attention, and Odin kind of expels him, telling him that he's not at peace and he doesn't know what he can do, you know, because when you go into Valhalla, you're supposed to have had your battle and be, you know, be at peace and ready for the next fight, the next big epic fight. But Frank still feels that he has some more to do, because that's always Frank Castle's thing. He feels like he needs to just eliminate it at the root of evil where he can, when he can. So he decides, tapping into the power of his power cosmic and his spirit of vengeance powers and all that stuff.
He still has all of that after he died? Really?
Yes. He has all of that. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. He actually lost it. But then Odin, just to get fucking rid of the guy, gave it back to him. Oh. Somehow Odin was able to work that out. I don't know how, but he did. I mean, he's essentially a god, so I guess he could work it out. Yeah, but yeah, he basically gave Frank his powers back just to get rid of him, just so he could go do what he needs to do. And Frank finds himself in front of the crib of Thanos on Titan back when he was a little baby. He just went back in time and was like, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill this kid in his crib. And despite that, he can't fucking do it. Frank Castle cannot kill an evil being.
Frank Castle said that he would go back. He would definitely go back and kill Hitler in his crib. Here he can't kill Thanos.
Well, here's the funny thing. At first he's ready to do it, but before he can do it, Thanos lunges out of the crib and tries to strangle him with the chain that he's whipping around.
Wow. That.
Yeah.
Wow. Holy
shit. So this book is already completely off the rails, but I'm here to tell you about issue two, which is phenomenal. So issue two catches up with Frank and baby Thanos in a bar talking about murder. Thanos is like, tell me more about this murder. I must know.
Baby like, Thanos?
He's like a toddler, more like, I guess. He's like 3 or 4, I guess, essentially, in what would be constitute. Like, he
is
can...
this in the actual Marvel Universe, or is this in one of the future alternates?
This is like in an alternate kind of offshoot thing where this is in the universe where Thanos won, and this is him doing his own thing in that world. Okay. So this is kind of an offshoot. So essentially, you know, he's chilling with toddler Thanos in a space bar, and he's there for a reason. He's there because at that particular day, Galactus comes to consume the planet. And Frank rides up to Galactus because, you know, they were bros back in the day before the universe ended. And he sort of fills Galactus in on everything that he doesn't already know. He gives Galactus all the memories of what is to be in the future and comes to the conclusions like, you know, we were allies once upon a time. And he doesn't know how to not be this spirit of vengeance in terms of being the Punisher and being the Ghost Rider and being a Herald of Galactus. You know, he brought the child, and I don't really know why he brought the child to Galactus, but Galactus assumes it was because he would kill Thanos. And because Galactus has no qualms about it. He's like, give me the child. I'll snap its neck or whatever. Cause Galactus doesn't fucking care. What does he care? He kills planets, you know? But yeah. Frank's like, no, I mean, I didn't do it for that. I guess I don't really know why I did it. And then as he's doing that and he's coming to his own conclusions, all of a sudden Thanos cries out, Sky Baby! And it's like, the fuck? And looks up and it's Uatu, the Watcher, who's chiming in on things. Frank's like, oh, Sky Baby. Yeah, funny. But he shows up because obviously Frank knows that Uatu only shows up when things of galactic import happen. And Uatu, in a rare moment of actually talking and doing shit, tells him, look, you're attempting to change a universal constant. Thanos is Thanos is Thanos. It's like trying to leash the Phoenix Force. It can't be done. His path is chosen. He's going to be who he's going to be. And if you continue down this path, you're going to make a really bad choice, and the consequences will be yours to deal with. And Frank gets really forthright and says, well, screw that. Fuck you two. I'm going to raise this child as a good guy and show you what can really be done. And Uatu just kind of goes, and there it is. And Frank's like, what? What happened? And Uatu's like, I love it, too, because Uatu really, like, talks on his level. Uatu's like, you don't see how this is a bad idea? And Frank's like, what? What's bad? And I'm going to read this verbatim. Uatu tells him, Francis, by making this choice, you've just created a timeline in which the Punisher raised Thanos as a child. Do you not see how that's a bad idea? And Frank's like, nah, I don't really get it. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen? And Uatu goes, okay, watch this. And all of a sudden, a huge explosion hits him. His bike is all messed up, and he falls to the ground with Thanos, and Boots put to his head with a gun. And the person who's holding the gun to his head goes, Frank Castle, Punisher, the Rider, whatever the hell your name is, step away from the kid. And he goes, well, who the hell are you to be telling me to do anything? And the guy goes, my name is Nathan Summers. I'm from the future. No. And then go to one page splash, and we're the Guardians of the Galaxy. Nathan Summers is leading a new crew of future fucked with Guardians of the Galaxy that is comprised of Jubilee of the X-Men, Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, who is wielding Captain America's shield, and also, based on the cover tease for the next issue, either has the Iron Fist or maybe the Star Branch. He has some sort of glowing fist power. I don't know what that relegates to, but it's one or the other.
That's interesting. Not bad. Okay.
Yeah. Also included is Rocket Raccoon rocking some sort of energy suit type thing. It actually almost looks like a kind of fucked up Nova suit or maybe even the Star Brand. I don't know exactly what it would be, but Rocket Raccoon is rocking some sort of power armor.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. And the kicker is Howard the Duck. wait, it gets better. Howard the Duck, empowered by Sidorak and is the Juggernaut.
Oh, that's awesomeness.
That is awesomeness. Amazing. Howard the Duck is 7 feet. He's like 8 feet tall with a duck bill coming out of the classic Juggernaut helmet with the round dome. It's just a duck bill, and it's amazing.
That is awesome sauce. Oh my gosh. That is fucking awesome.
If you look up no other part of this series, look up that last page because it's fucking bonkers. This book is so off the rails. But I love it so much. It's so much fun. And honestly, after last week's debacle with Old Man Hawkeye, I needed a breath of fresh air and some fun in my life. And this book is definitely delivering on the batshit crazy fun stuff. It's just a grand old time had by all. It's Donny Cates taking his foot off the pedal, or putting his foot down on the pedal and just being like, yeah, we're going to ride with this. Let's do it. So,
he has the benefit of not having to worry about continuity, and that just frees up all kinds of shit, you know.
So, oh yeah,
yeah. I can see somebody really getting into that and enjoying just the pure creativity that this guy is gonna. He's a guy, right?
Yeah, he is. He's a dude. Yeah, Donnie Cates is just having so much fun with this. And the benefit of not having to be held by continuity is definitely working for him.
Wow.
And also the dude having fun with this is Dylan Burnett, who's the artist on both issues, and he's the ongoing artist for the time being. Every page is colorful and splashy and gritty and violent and all this crazy shit going on. And the way he draws Cable is almost so indicative of like classic 90s. He's got the huge-ass shoulder pads and bullet casings and stuff. And he looks like just a brick shit house. He looks like a square. Like, that's his body type. And it's just, it's so good. Like, I dig the hell out of this book. I'm having so much fun with this crazy shit. And also, completely as an aside, on the cover of the issue is the Cosmic Ghost Rider battling a Star Shark, which is an intergalactic creature that looks like a shark with bony plate armor on it or whatever, that just so happened to be trawling in Galactus's wake, you know, kind of consuming the leftovers and stuff. And that's the least crazy thing that happens in the last two issues so far.
Wow.
It's absolutely bonkers, but I love it. I'm having a grand old time with it. Honestly, I mean, Donny Cates is having fun with it, so I'm having fun. And Dylan Burnett actually almost looks like he came from the Scotty Young school. I don't know if he, like, apprenticed or based some of his art off him, but it's a rougher around the edges kind of Scotty Young, but it has more substance to it than most of Scotty Young's stuff. You know, I love Scotty Young, but he does very rounded, colorful stuff, and this has more of an edge to it. It works better for the tone of the story. So,
okay.
I mean, I loved it. I'm having fun with it. I'm going to keep on for the time being as long as it stays, you know, what it is, because it's absolutely bonkers and I love it. And again, if you look up no other part of this story, just check out the new Guardians lineup. It's so much fun. So this issue was a blast. I thought it was hilarious and I dug it. I give it a 4 out of 5 just based on pure entertainment value. I thought it was great. The story itself has some questionable hiccups, like, for example, Frank Castle not being able to kill an evil person, but at the same time, it's like that sort of, you know, it is the thing you step over to tell the rest of the story, so I'm willing to cut him some slack. And, you know, I'll definitely be back for issue 3. So I think it's great, and I recommend anybody who's a fan of that type of thing, definitely give it the time of day, because it's fun, if nothing else.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And that is going to do it for us here at the Mighty Warriors Theme Marvel Podcast for this for the next couple weeks. For those of you wondering where you can find us when we're not doing a podcast, we are over on Facebook at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a news aggregator, which means what, Taser?
We steal stories.
You're goddamn right. We steal stories from everywhere and bring you only the important stuff in a highlighted single stream of news and entertainment stuff.
Yeah.
It's, like us over there and you'll get notifications of the news we share as well as when the new episodes are up. We're also over on Twitter at Warriors3PCast. That's WARRIORZ, the number 3, PCAST. You know, we also post there with news and when the episodes are lit up and stuff. We are also presently on the we're on WordPress, which is our main site. We've had that forever, and every episode gets posted there. That is thewarriors3.wordpress.com. You can find me personally on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That is going to be at NO_MR_POWERS. And if you want most direct updates, look, subscribe to us on iTunes. You'll get updated consistently when the episode posts. And hey, maybe give us a nice rating and leave a kind word in reviews. We would appreciate that. You know, we were trying to cultivate a community here.
That still exists?
Yes, it is, sir. Yes,
why?
It is.
Why do you people do that when you could just find it illegally out there? That's what we do. Do what
don't
the world
you
want to
be super famous one day, Taser? Don't you want to be famous and have advertisers and all kinds of crazy shit?
I would rather be infamous.
Oh, that is the most perfect sum of your character I think I've ever heard. So, all right, fair enough. Yeah. So in that case, that's it for me, Taser. You got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, Christy Yamaguchi.
Hey, look at that! For the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast. I am Bri, the newsboy, your Wyatt Wingfoot. This is Taser over here. And we'll catch you folks next time. In the meantime, in the words of our illustrious boss man, stay marvelous.
And if you happen to see him down there in Texarkana, give him a lift in the trunk because he's probably still running from those ICE agents. Okay? You know, I'm just saying, God. We got to look out for him.